episode 112 of the TV Dudes, recorded December 11th, 2016. Best of TV 2016. Guys, this has been a terrible, terrible, no good, very horrible year. 2016 has just been a dumpster fire. John Oliver had a bunch of great lines describing just what a fucked up year this is.
Yeah, every single John Oliver episode where they gave a new election 2016 or, and like that secondary Rocky Bullwinkle title was always just like two on the nose.
Yeah, it perfectly encapsulated how terrible this year was, except TV was pretty awesome.
TV
this year.
Was pretty awesome. There was a lot of great TV this year.
And that's our bread and butter, folks. So
our circuses. Bread and circuses.
That's our bread and circuses. So if you guys are mourning the rest of the year, at least you have the wonderfulness of television. And we here at the TV Dudes have almost a full house.
Just
Randy,
about.
We are we're squatting in Randy's nerditorium here. And Randy is not feeling well, so he had to bail on the best of 2016, which just kind of puts a perfect end cap, I think, on how terrible this
year
is.
I think it was just the year. It was like the fifth or sixth time that someone said the year 2016, and Randy just started vomiting.
I can't go on. But fair enough, we are going to cover the rest of the 2016 without him. I'm Grant.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Les.
And yeah, let's go ahead and get into it, guys, because we got a lot to cover.
Oh my gosh, so much TV.
Yeah. Well, before we do that, I'm going to do the quick plugs. Once again, you guys all know that you can go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a review. It's a great way to help out the site. Another great way to help us out is go to patreon.com/TVDudes. If you guys make a per episode pledge in exchange, we give you guys bonus exclusive content. We definitely make it worth it. And you know what? Maybe for Christmas, I'm going to release some of those to the public so you guys can get a little taste of what you might be missing out
Patreon
on.
Patreon freebies.
Yeah. And we are wrapping up Beach Cop Detectives. We got the last few episodes in the can. I think we have the last interview. Hopefully, I'm so looking forward to the finish line on this, and I'll be very proud to put a period on this project. And if you guys like us on Facebook and if you like us on Twitter, there you can go ahead and ask us any little questions you guys might have for us. And we got some for our end of the year episode here, guys. So if we go and check that out, the first question comes to us from Zach McLernan, who says, assembled TV dudes and dudettes, or dudette, I suppose.
I'll stand in dudette solidarity
like
with you.
Let me solidarity. I like the idea that they think you guys know more than one girl. It's cute. It's cute.
We really don't. I ask you this on this most humbled of gatherings. What show in the next 2 to 3 years are you most anxious / sad to see end? Game of Thrones and The Americans are coming up, to name a few. Thank you for an amazing year. In the real world, it may have saddening, but here in the TV universe, it burns bright and festive. The lights, of course, being made by burning sacrifices of canceled shows to honor the Lord of Light, for the night is dark and full of terrors. Keep up the great work, for as Gandalf says, even the darkest times must eventually end. For me, you are one of the little joys that makes things better.
Aww.
Keep drinking the cocaine wine, may the milk always flow from the center of the maze.
There you go.
That's like the nicest thing I've ever heard. That's like the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Yeah, it's like somehow we're a bright spot in the terrible dumpster fire of 2016.
The most compliment I've ever received.
Yeah, it's funny. So during this shit year, one time when I was walking in the beach, I looked behind me and I thought I only saw one set of footprints. And I think it was because that guy was carrying me. I had no idea, sir. God bless you.
So what shows are you not looking forward to having end?
One that comes immediately to my mind is Bob's Burgers.
Yeah, is it coming to a close?
They don't think they have a date set or anything, but
it could go full Simpsons like 40 years.
They could, but maybe I would prefer they didn't.
Don't be too sad, I
yeah,
guess.
Exactly. I mean, I really love that show. I think it's on one of the ones that I wanted to talk about actually tonight.
What if they did a spinoff where Eugene is grown up and he's running the burger joint? Eugene's like, burgers.
The criminal underworld that Luis runs as a grown up, still wearing Santa hat.
Oh yeah.
I would watch that.
It's
but yeah, sometimes I worry that maybe, you know, in the next few years that arc might be going down, and I would miss them.
What about you guys?
Oh, I keep going back to Veep. I'm like, they're only going to do it for so many seasons. And two, kind of to your point, you know, you only want to see it for so many more seasons before it's kind of had its time.
I feel like Veep and House of Cards have so much more material because of this year, though. Oh, shit, we weren't crazy enough.
Well, they don't want to become reality TV shows. And that's what's going to happen if they become, like, biographies.
Yeah, I know he brought up The Americans and Game of Thrones, but I find when they're large plot, like overarching plot shows that are the bingeable kind for me mostly, I'm always fine with them having an ending.
Yeah.
Like like Game of Thrones is going to have an ending. These things, they need to cap off. And in some cases, there's so much TV on that I wait for some things to cap off so that I can sit and binge the whole thing as this complete beautiful thing. The ones that I really get sad about ending are comedies that are still chugging along that just aren't enjoyable by a wide enough swath of people. Like, I feel like Bob's Burgers might still be in a really great season, but have lost that part of the audience that takes it from fringe into mainstream.
And
It's Always Sunny may still be going strong for a core audience, but not quite broad enough anymore.
And I don't think it matters for them.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes these comedies get poached off. And so, But even then, sometimes these things just need to end. I mean, like The Simpsons, at this point, I just want it to keep going like a bad joke that just needs to keep getting told for another 40 minutes before it gets funny again. And like, I just want The Simpsons to run to like 100 seasons. It's just some absurdity. But I don't really want any other show to do that. They've got that joke locked.
Well, let's move on to the next question. This is from Ross Brown, who says, "Hello, creators of cocaine wine."
We did not create cocaine wine. But
if only I was that clever, sir.
We're going to put a patent on it. Which two casts from separate TV shows would you swap around? Man.
Ooh.
And just like see the reaction of putting like the It's Always Sunny gang in Walking Dead or something like that. See how they're going to react there.
That'd be really easy to do with comedies, but I'm trying to think of dramas like
Parks and Rec with Sons of Anarchy.
Oh yeah, that would be pretty funny.
You know, I think Westworld and Game of Thrones, I think they could do it.
Dramatically. I was thinking Westworld too, but I was thinking Westworld and Next Generation. Like seeing the Westworld team
it's just Westworld is a holodeck accident.
Yeah.
That would be perfect.
Yeah, I feel like there would be a lot of shows where you could swap them out and the other shows people would come in and be insanely efficient and like wrap the season's plot up in an episode or two. Like, I feel like you could drop Olivia Pope from Scandal and like her team of gladiators into other crime procedural shows and then just like wrap this Law and Order bullshit up in no time, like 15 minutes into the episode, just done. But I think it'd be most fun to swap out comedies. Like I would love to throw like the It's Always Sunny guys into Walking Dead.
We're actually combining your answers, the Parks and Rec guys in Law and Order.
Yes. Yes. Oh my god.
New department.
It would also be fun if we could swap someone to like teach a lesson, like divorce. I would like to swap the cast around there so that we could teach those whiny white 40-year-olds how annoying they are. They're like, oh, well, when it's not us, it's actually not that great to watch. And I'm like, exactly.
I feel like on that show, I feel like an executive watched Girls and went, this isn't appealing to older people. We just need to recast it. And they just, they took like the blatantly unlikable premise of so many of the characters on Girls and just aged them up into these horribly dysfunctional marriages. Like,
yeah, and if we just swapped their casts, I think the fans of shows like that would be like, wait a minute, guys, these people need to lift their chin up. They don't have it so bad. And you're like, exactly,
buck
bitches.
Up, Molly Shannon.
Exactly.
Take the cast of Girls, throw them into Oz.
For the win.
All right, next question comes to us from Kyle Volte, who says, hello, imbibers of the fine, fine cocaine wine.
Ooh.
Again with the cocaine wine.
We've struck a nerve with this.
Yeah, this is our new milk, I guess.
I don't know if you guys know this, but cocaine is like really popular.
It's back.
We brought it back.
With a look towards the future, are there any of your past predictions about TV that you are sure have to come true in 2017?
Oh, man. I don't know what we're talking about later, but one of y'all nailed it when we start talking about Westworld.
Oh,
you got to stay tuned if you want to hear that, I think. But yeah,
Randy was calling a lot of those things. I feel like he was snooping into the back channels and reading other people's theories.
Oh, and passing them off as his own.
Yeah, dude. I definitely think that technology wise, how people will be viewing television is going to shift more and more. We have that DirecTV Now merger with Time Warner. And so people are definitely moving away from cable. They're going to be streaming. And if you have this access to that, it seems like we ought to get some a la carte system soon enough. I mean, that's what I'm hoping for. I don't want what DirecTV Now had. It was like a set 100 channels package. I'm like, that's still the same bullshit. I don't want like 99 of those 100 channels exactly. You guys are offering.
You know what I think? I'm going to make a prediction now. And that is, I see in 2017 a show busting out on like CISO Network or one of these other online streaming services and creating like another demand for a new service. And this time next year, we're not going to be talking about what was the show of 2017, but we're going to be talking about this new network or this new site that now everybody's gravitating towards because of their flagship show.
Yeah, I think that's happening more and more. I think we're going to see a further and further intrusion of Roku and streaming boxes that feel like channels and feel more like a TV channel surfing option, which I think is going to broaden that base and get more and more of like my parents who are still used to flipping through cable to flip through a Roku and it feel about the same. I think the more and more that happens, the more we're going to see some kind of terrible early entries, but more and more fighting through what a la carte television ought to look like and how that ought to be sold to us. I do think blipverts are coming. I think they're going to be beaming advertisements straight into our head, and we'll have max headroom in a couple of years.
I was like, what are blipverts?
Matt Furr is too old. I don't know who it'll be, but I feel like there's a Justin Bieber max headroom on its way. We're doomed as a society.
It's not just in TV, folks. We're doomed all across the board. But last question comes to us from Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, "Hi, Order of the Dudes. What do you think were the most improved or most declined shows of 2016? It's more direct to rank what is the best overall, but ongoing series can have season-to-season drops or spikes in quality that can shape your opinion. I was one of the people that thought Game of Thrones Season 5 had a massive drop in quality, sans some great moments like Hard Home, but Season 6 came around with moments like Hold the Door and the last two episodes to make the season a solid third place behind Seasons 3 and 4. Conversely, Mr. Robot Season 1 was my favorite new show last year, but a few episodes into Season 2 and Sam Esmail's navel-gazing went from off-putting to infuriating. Wow. The writing and the pacing of Mr. Robot Season 2 stretched out what seemed like a 5-episode arc on paper to 12-episode season. Happy holidays! This cannot be considered politically correct since everyone is celebrating some holiday near the winter solstice and another for the new calendar year." Well, he's getting political here.
Okay.
It's just faster to say the two words, damn it. Happy holidays. Cool. Well, thank you. And Merry Christmas to you, Jonathan. I'm kidding.
No, I think there's two things that we know about Jonathan. We know, one, he's got a spreadsheet somewhere with all of his favorite TV shows ranked with in meticulous order.
Yes.
And he's
yes.
obviously a huge fan of the Oh, Mr. Roboto podcast. Yes. On permanent record.
I also had a horrible problem with Mr. Robot Season 2 and haven't finished it out yet, even though I bought the whole thing. It did not infuriate me quite as much as him, but it was slow to get through and there was a lot of TV going, and I'm about halfway through it. As I understand it, it's about to take off a little bit more at the point I'm at, but yeah, I kind of had a problem with that. I wouldn't say that that's the most declined show though, because from what I've heard, it's really pulled it out. I did not watch Sleepy Hollow this year, but Sleepy Hollow.
I didn't know it was still on.
see, you didn't know Sleepy Hollow was still on and has been renewed for another season. But it actually came across my news feed, even though I don't watch it, because all the lead actors bailed on that show.
Like, seriously?
Nobody wants to be on that show. Apparently, I think the guy playing Ichabod is still on it, but it's. For all the world, it seems like that guy is just grudging. Like he looks mad at his agent or something in photos. Like, I can't get out of this.
Acting?
Like, it seriously, it looks like a hate act. I don't even know who they paired him with, but it really does. It looks like everybody's just like, no, I'm good. Which, considering that show is such a shockingly good first season when it should have been terrible, and then to watch it actually cross into like, oh wait, this is the show I thought you were going to be when you first premiered. That's sad.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you guys? Anything that just declined this year?
I was going to say Inclined BoJack Horseman. I really liked season three. I thought that the exploration they did with the animation was beautiful. I loved like the exploration of like mental health issues. Also, it was so fucking funny. So that was the one that came to my mind. But that was an Incline. I don't know if you have an Incline.
Well, I got a good Decline, and it's the one that everybody keeps talking about. And admittedly, I've only seen the first episode, but I think this is going to be the season for Walking Dead where, I mean, the ratings have already dropped. I think
they're bad.
Yeah, they went down.
I only watched that first episode.
Yeah, and
they lost a third of their audience already. And that's terrible.
All the chatter, like it used to be. Like Westworld or Game of Thrones, where everybody talked about it each week, and yeah, it's totally lost that appeal.
You know, it's funny because I was one of the fans of the first episode back, and yet the subsequent episodes are just terrible.
Yeah,
it's squandering what I thought was all the interesting tension that they built up. Like they had Daryl squirreled away, and I thought that we were gonna see something like. And it's bleak, but it's bleak and boring what they did with Daryl. Then they had some episode where some guy has a Bengal tiger as his pet, and it's just kind of, it went absurd. So it went boring and then absurd. And then another boring episode with Rick where they just reemphasize that he is under Negan's spell and will do whatever. And he kind of like just sold out everything that we've built up for the past. Anyway, I'm really pissed off with that show. I agree with you. Declined.
Yeah.
Guys, so it's time for us to go into our top 10 TV shows of 2016. And how we decided to do this, since we have a collective of us, we all wrote in what our favorite shows were, our own personal top 10. And then we kind of used that to merge and cross them all to come up with a TV Dudes official top 10 list.
Dun, 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 dun.
And as we go through this, we're going to try and make sure we stick to about 5 minutes of discussion per, so that this isn't the longest episode ever.
Well, I'm imagining if it's on this list, you've probably heard us talk about these shows a couple times.
Yeah, we may have geeked out about these before.
Exactly. But the very first one we are going to discuss is our number 10, Luke Cage. What'd you guys think of this?
Less.
I like Luke Cage. The visuals of it, it looked different than the other Marvel Netflix shows. The music of it was just perfect. I thought that they did so many things behind the scenes that were just the right move over and over and over for making this show. That said, it did have problems. The pacing of it was an issue with almost everyone I talked to. I still don't think Marvel has figured out quite how to break their story across a Netflix binge. It felt a couple episodes too long, or like there was a weird seam in the middle of it where it either slowed down for you or took off for you. But a lot of people had a division point around episode 6, I think.
Another thing that could have been when the money ran out too. Yeah, I mean, because the things in the quality, we're talking about the costumes, the infamous scene where they left the bullet in, things like that.
There were just a couple of things. I feel like overall that was the show Marvel needed to release this year. It needed to put a break between. I needed to see that they could tweak their look a little bit, and that it wasn't all going to look the same Hell's Kitchen as Daredevil.
They definitely did.
And I feel like this was the. This was a good move of different showrunners, different people making this show. That said, I feel like some of the lines were just cheeseball. I have a problem with some of Hadari Coker's writing in some of his other movies. But overall, this was a great show that needed to come out this year.
Yeah, I loved it. This is one of my favorite shows for all the reasons you kind of listed. There was a few reasons I didn't like it. I wasn't as upset with the pacing, although I think it's a really fair criticism. One of the things I was a little really about was Simon Missick's Misty Knight character.
Was she too hot for you?
Yeah, she was having that problem too.
Tone it down, girl.
I kind of felt like there were times when she was clearly this brilliant detective, like the character is supposed to be, but there was so much bumbling kind of going on at the same time that I wasn't sure they found a way to both have this really gifted, brilliant, smoking hot detective, but also allow for the story to play out. And so I think that writing miss was a knock on her character in particular, and that kind of irked me a little bit.
There were a couple times where the huge plot points hung on her ineptness as a cop, where everything else about her character hung on her being this amazingly astute detective, where she walked on the crime scene and she did the recreated in your head, the thing that would have been the gimmick on
the
any
Boondock
other TV
Saints.
Show.
The Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, the Willem Dafoe and Boondock Saints. Only then she wasn't seeing her partner through the entire thing. Plus, sometimes she rattled off cringeworthy bad 70s cop lines. Especially in the first couple of episodes where I went, oh my God, who the fuck wrote your dialogue?
Well, that's the balancing act the show has to do, because the comic does have so many great lines like that are really cheesy and kind of, you know, from a bygone era. But this show is very much in like this kind of real world, and where you had mentioned it falling apart kind of towards the second half of the season, they lost that balance, you know, where some of the cheesy stuff was seeping into some of the more realistic story elements. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, this is, out of all these Marvel Netflix shows, best soundtrack, and I think it pushes...
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, it pushes music in a great direction, just coordinating all those musicians. And then also, I think the title card sequence at the beginning is also gorgeous. My favorite from this, which Daredevil is a really good one, too, though.
So I think Daredevil's my favorite.
But I love the Luke Cage. Actually, they're all good, man. I take that back.
Those last three episodes of Luke Cage pulled whatever pacing issues I had with it out, and really... I was very satisfied with that show as a whole when I finished it.
Yeah. I liked, too, where they placed it in the Marvel Universe. That was awesome. And I really like Rosario Dawson. Sorry, I'm a little sick as well. Character quite a bit. And so I liked seeing her fleshed out.
Yeah, I had issues with the Night Nurse character being through all of them, but she does a great job with it. And if that's the connective tissue they're using, they seem to be using it well.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to our number 9 pick, which is The Night Of over on HBO.
Ta-da.
With John Turturro and I don't remember the guy's name, but he's also going to be in Rogue One, folks.
Yeah, John Turturro's so awesome. I had no idea this show existed. You're telling me that John Turturro is in an HBO show?
He's
and
one
I
of the
do
best
a fucking
parts
podcast
of this show.
About television.
Let me tell
God
you
damn
this.
You peak TV.
So this show, which is about this night where a murder takes place of this one girl. This guy has a chance encounter with a girl. He hooks up with her. He gets drunk, does drugs with her, and he seems to be a fairly straight-laced kid, at least at the start.
Yep.
He gets kind of wrapped up in this whole thing where he wakes up downstairs in the kitchen, finds her stabbed to death in the room up above where he had just slept with her, grabs the murder weapon, and runs out the door because he's freaking out.
But here's the kicker. He's a brown man.
Oh, yeah. And this it just becomes this whole big nightmare, and you end up watching this study of the system and how he gets arrested, how he gets tried for that, the effects of this kind of clean-cut kid going to Rikers and the effect that has on him, and meanwhile the kind of fucked up way that our legal system works.
Seriously, if he wasn't a criminal going in, and the show is constantly making you go back and forth with whether or not you think he did it or not, much like something like Making a Murderer or the podcast Serial, but you look at the end of it, and if this kid wasn't a criminal when he went in there, he sure as hell is going to be a criminal going out of there.
Yeah, either way, even if he did this one random act, he's now going to be systemically bad.
Yeah, the system ends up corrupting everyone that it touches with this problem, and it's tragic all the way through, and it's so good. You know what's interesting about this is this was produced by James Gandolfini, who was supposed to be in the John Turturro role, and the lead cop was supposed to be De Niro, but then Gandolfini died.
Bill Camp, who plays the lead cop, amazing performance.
Like, yeah,
amazing actor. Oh, Riz Ahmed was the name of the
Riz
actor
Ahmed.
Who's going to be in Rogue One.
Yeah. Which I hear good things about that. Oh, and that's our number one TV show.
Our best show this year was Rogue. We haven't even seen it.
I just hear such great things. But man, this show blew me away in the first few episodes. It was one of those that I thought was so powerful that I was glad I had to wait a week between episodes so that I could take a breather and digest it. A lot of these shows, I just want to, like, next episode, next episode, next episode. I need it. And my only gripe was that I thought it kind of takes a shift from this slow legal process to becoming just a standard courtroom procedural in the last couple episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little different.
One of my favorite TV Dudes moments from 2016, well, actually from ever, because I've only been on since 2016, but it was when we were talking about the night of, and I come in for that wrap-up episode, and we just get to talking about it, and I realize, no, I haven't seen the season finale. I've seen the penultimate.
Oh, that's hysterical.
But here's the thing. It takes such a crazy turn in the season finale. I mean, characters are doing stuff that you would have never guessed throughout the rest
of
the show.
I started talking about this with you, and you go, Wait, what the hell are you talking about? Like, oh shit, you didn't even see this episode?
I thought he was making it up. I thought he was joking with me.
Your comparison with it to Oz, I think I was watching Oz around the... That was the first start of binge television, right? I mean, that was around the time where you're first getting Sopranos on a massive DVD box set, and we were all just, oh, I can watch one more. Oz was the first show after starting to binge television where I would get through two episodes and go, unclean, must shower, watch a third Oz episode in a row.
Well, let's move on to our number 8, which is also from HBO, Insecure.
Ooh.
Ashley, you've watched this as well, right?
I have.
So you can kick things off. What did you think?
Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, Insecure is a comedy about Issa. She is, I believe, exactly 29, but in her late 20s and kind of coming to terms with not loving her job.
Comedian Issa Rae.
Comedian Issa Rae.
Yeah, pilot's her birthday. She turns 29 in the pilot.
Yeah, she turns 29 in the pilot. She doesn't love her job. Her current boyfriend, she's basically been with throughout her 20s. And he's currently between jobs, working on an app that isn't working out, and ends up having to kind of take a part time or kind of in between job at Best Buy. So she's a little bit in a rut. Her best friend Molly is kind of who she pals around with, and I loved it. I thought it was really funny. Issa Rae is so funny, and there's a lot of. I don't know. It's just a lot of the, like, she writes it, she does the production on it, and so there's a lot of the flavor of her comedy in it. I like, her character is a rapper. And so whenever she's kind of trying to work through something, or she's trying to decide how to, like, you know, conduct a meeting or how to look that night, she kind of talks to herself in the mirror and performs these impromptu raps, which I think are delightful.
Oh, yeah, same here.
It's very nerdy. So good. It's very endearing.
She's such a dork. And she'll try on different lipsticks and have different attitudes. That I really enjoyed. Quite a bit.
I really love this show too. I binged through this in a day. I think you were saying you did the same, like second episode through.
Yeah. I watched one episode and I was like, this is going to be for me. And the second one I watched them all. I mean, I haven't seen a show quite like this. It's decidedly different, which was refreshing.
When I saw the first episode of this, I'd watched the trailer. She had a lot of fun promotional stuff on HBO that was popping up after other shows. And I assumed I knew what the show was going to be about. And after that first episode, I had a feeling similar to when I saw the Flight of the Concords TV show for the first time. Like, HBO has this great talent for finding these new comedic voices and giving us and evolving kind of their comedic voice on their network. And it really was something new and out there for me.
One other thing I have to admit that I love about the movie is all the dudes in it are smoking hot.
They really make a point of showing some butts.
So, like, there's always that thing of, like, these hot wives and these, like, schlubby dudes in comedies and on, like, network television and things of the sort. The women in this are not schlubby. They're all adorable. But all the dudes in it are super hot and usually working out or something like this, which was both lovely and charming.
My one of my favorite aspects of the show is her interactions with her office, which they tend to be majority white. All their projects are with, you know, African American kids.
I've only seen the first episode of this, and I'm looking forward to catching the rest of it. But through that whole pilot, her going into the office and them having started a inner city youth nonprofit, and she's basically their only hire of color, it seems like, or their only minority hire at all. And so they just keep awkwardly looking at her during meetings of, like, well, how do we reach these kids? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a really nice, not nice that way, but a very interesting episode where her best friend Molly is an attorney and the only black woman attorney that we see in it. At any rate, there might be others who work at the firm, but none that we see. And they hire on a junior partner who is also black. And they try to have her talk to the younger person about cultural differences. And it's just... it's cringeworthy and enlightening. And also, it was funny. Like, it was a funny episode, too. I don't know how they're pulling off this weird mix.
There were
it's fabulous.
Even in that first episode, there were some great one-off lines that cracked me up that I that just surprised me with their, like, oh, other shows would have ham-handedly spent an episode on that joke, but you guys just did it and walked away.
Yeah.
I did think that you had a fair criticism of it, though, Grant.
Yeah, and I brought this up last week as well when I was talking about Search Party, because Search Party does a very similar thing, but and that's a show on TBS. But Insecure, it does this trope where you have the female character, it seems to be always female character led comedies where she will have an infidelity. She'll cheat on her man, and then she feels guilty about it for the rest of the season up until the climax, which is going to be the finale, and she has to confess and have everything fall apart on her. And I just kind of don't like that it seems so common that I see this as a story plot that she has to cheat and she has to feel guilty. I would prefer that we explore different things, because I was loving every other kind of aspect they were exploring in the show.
So TV Dude's recommendation, ladies, don't tell your man. He doesn't want to hear that. He doesn't want to know.
2017, keep it interesting. Keep it secret.
Either don't tell your man or don't do that same plot line I've seen a bunch.
Explore something else.
Yeah. Well, let's jump over to number 7, which is Better Call Saul over on AMC. It just had its second season. And I don't know who else watched all the way through this, but man, this show continues to carry the legacy that I think Breaking Bad established. And the writing is just so tight. And the whole show, I'm just always impressed with how they stack, because this is a prequel. So we know where Saul Goodman's character, Jimmy, is heading. He's becoming Saul. But we also see the beginning of Mike Ehrmantraut and how he's kind of getting sucked back into the criminal world and how he's really smart about it and kind of dangerous, and him crossing paths with the big bad in this. What is his name? Nacho. And then we're getting the reveal that we're going to see Gus.
So yeah, does Gus Fring eventually show up?
Gus, it's pretty clear that Gus is the guy that wrote the note on the car in the very last episode to Mike. So everyone's excited that we're going to see Gus in season 3, which is great, because that actor, I feel like he's had a string of terrible shows. He's
been on Carlo Esposito. Yeah. Esposito. Yeah. Yeah. God, I wish he wasn't on Once Upon a Time.
Oh yeah.
So from season 1, does season 2 step it up?
I'd say it doesn't necessarily step it up. It's just consistently good. Nice. It's one of my favorite shows. I would definitely put this in my top 5, but I think you guys need to watch it.
I plowed through season 1 so fast. I mean, just as soon as it was available for streaming, someone texted me, "Hey, it's on Netflix," and boom, we were right through that.
Well, it should be up soon, I think, season 2.
And yeah, like you said, it's a prequel, so you know where it's going, but it's characters you love and it's an interesting ride. And honestly, seeing where Mike came from and go, like, I love Bob Odenkirk, and Saul's a great character, Jimmy's a great character, but
the tragedy there.
Mike was my gem on Breaking Bad. Like, that, I think he was my favorite thing overall on that show. Was just this, like, Eeyore of a smart criminal that knew so much more than the other idiots planning this shit.
And Jonathan Banks, he just holds the weight of the world on his face. He's just so miserable.
Yeah,
all the
time.
Looks
so tired of his shit.
Let's move on to number 6, which we have as Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. It's funny that we have a show that has steered so politically this whole year, and in a way, we champion like everything he's saying, and it also just makes us feel miserable for how things have gone.
I just continue to be amazed by that show. the lost art of oratory. Like, I can't think of another time where we just watch somebody talk on a topic and working in humor and the news for like 20 minutes and do it so effectively. I just continue to be shocked at how good every episode is.
It's the kind of video essay that I feel like I would have wanted from like a Frontline or a 60 Minutes back in the day. And I know that he's not technically a news show, but...
Oh, no, he doesn't. They never want to be called this.
But it's not like just his political stuff. I mean, obviously, his political stuff has been pretty great this year. But any topic, I mean, whether it be civil asset forfeiture or payday loans or...
Opiates.
Yeah, opioid crisis. Yeah. Like
Puerto Rico?
Yeah, any video. Yes, any video topic or any topic they've taken on, their video essay on it is a really in-depth, well-done piece. Like... it was this surprising to me as the first time I realized Vice Magazine was putting out incredibly in-depth pieces on things.
Well, and you know where John Oliver is succeeding, where 60 Minutes has failed, and you know is why that sort of extended what do they call that long form news like in-depth
news
story?
Magazine.
Well,
but yeah,
he's able to package his main story for social media, and the it's getting shared. They're almost as much as people are watching it on the show, and it's, you know, it's definitely keeping these stories alive.
Being on HBO, I feel like that really helped him. Being on a pay channel, I think it really benefited that show to be able to break those monologue 20 minutes off into YouTubeable chunks.
Do you remember season one where they were going to give him like 10 episodes or something, and they just kept upping the episode? And it's like, this guy's going to make 10. I mean, you got to be kidding me. He needs way more than that.
Yeah, I really like that he's just out there in the world, because there was a moment, I think it was when Jimmy Fallon tussled Trump's hair, that I really just viscerally missed David Letterman. Like a cutting kind of, comedic look at the world. And for me, John Oliver is kind of filling that role a little bit with the
I change
of the
Colbert
Daily Show
taking Letterman's show over to be that, but Oliver's doing it instead.
Number five goes to The Good Place over on NBC, which, you know, it's funny because this is only halfway through its season, but I think most of us are just already so taken with this new Mike Schur comedy that it's just like, yeah, we need to put this in our top 10 list.
Well, and, you know, like a lot of the other shows that are going to be higher on the list, this show kind of unlocks the imagination in a way that most TV just cannot get it. Even with these crazy concepts, they just cannot get us to really think, oh, what more could be in this world, you know, in these characters. And that's every episode does that. It makes you wonder what could be next.
This is taking an ensemble comedic group like Mike Schur has done with Parks and Rec, and which he assisted on with The Office. And whereas those both had shaky first seasons, this hits the ground running. It knows who its characters. It knows the balance it needs between the character personalities, and it knows the storylines that it needs to hit to keep it funny right from the get-go. And yeah, like you said, it's wildly creative. It's high concept, which can make it a little bit daunting, and I'm not sure if their viewer numbers are fantastic.
That was the thing. The first episode, my first thought was, oh, this is going to be great until they cancel it.
Yeah, I've actually talked a couple of people into giving this a shot just because I had that feeling too. And really, I was surprised that this made my list, but it did. Even though it's a brand new show, even though it's only halfway through its first season, if it were just a great ensemble cast, we've seen, you know, a good list of people put together in a crap show. If it were just a cute premise, it would have fizzled after a couple of episodes, but they've continually twisted their premise every episode with a little bit of a cliffhanger that has somehow surprised me each time, where I've gone, oh, wow, I did not expect this to unfold that way.
Yeah, or that quickly.
Or that quickly.
Yeah, a lot of these you go, oh, that would be like a mid-season finale, but they did it in like episode 3.
There's a note for the main character in the pilot saying, I know you're not supposed to be here. And I really thought that the reveal of that would be the season finale. And it's not. It's resolved relatively quickly who leaves the note for her. Little things like that. They just keep, they're unafraid to clip through their mysteries because they know that they've got a next thing that's just that they can't wait to get to.
We get a glimpse of the bad place.
Yes.
I could totally see them doing a season or a half of a season in the bad place. Yeah. Like where all the characters have to spend.
I could see that being
time
their time
there.
Jump. Have a season premiere come back in the bad place with no mention of the good place. Just, oh no, we're not doing that show this time. and run that Terrence and Phillip style for an episode.
And the show consistently has heart. It has an overall positive message that they kind of hide behind a lot of snark and sarcasm. And I find that it's nice to have a little bit of a continuation of what Parks and Rec did so well about, like, having community and having the joy of friendship kind of emphasized in a TV show like that.
Yeah, I feel like the show does well what I've seen a lot of shows attempt to do well. And so it's just kind of nice to see something just groove along where it's got a great premise. It's really out there, really high concept. All the actors are on board. Everybody's bringing their best work.
Shout out to William Jackson Harper, who plays, what's her soulmate? Cheedy? Cheedy, yeah. That guy is such a breakout. And yes. I expect to see him in a lot more stuff.
Yeah, he's playing a great straight man in that.
Yeah. Let's move on to our number four, which is Atlanta. This is the starring vehicle for Donald Glover, who's writing, producing, directing, composing. I don't know. He's doing everything because this guy's a complete jack of all trades.
And in the middle of doing this, put out a really great album last week.
Yeah.
in the R&B soul category. That is just like a P-Funk astonishing album.
It's impressive how that guy musically keeps reinventing himself with each album.
Yeah, I really don't know when he sleeps. He's freaking amazing.
Yeah.
I was getting ready to say this. Sounds like an advert for Adderall.
But Atlanta, for any of you who are unfamiliar, it's a story of Ernest Marks, who is an up-and-coming producer, although he's also just kind of living in a garage. Living in a storage shed.
Yeah.
And
his parents won't let him back in the house.
Yeah. He's a poor dude trying to make it as a producer for his cousin, and he's struggling. And where you think the show is going to naturally go, you think it's going to be, you know, starting at the bottom, and you're going to see him piecing his way by the end of the season to making it big. It doesn't go that way. It's more just kind of showing the relationships of people and how things are a little bit different in how they operate in the city of Atlanta.
Yeah, it's so much just him grinding, and it doesn't get that far in one season. I mean, they don't hit the top of the rap game in one season.
No. I mean, at most, the... what's his cousin's name?
Alfred. Albert. I'm blanking on his name now.
Oh, Paperboy.
Paperboy.
There
Alfred,
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alfred. Which, that song's catchy, too. But
I hate that song.
But Paperboy, he gets that interview. I think that's like the biggest thing he gets to do, some public access interview.
No, it's on the Black something network, BAN.
Some BET equivalent.
It's the BET
thing.
Knockoff. Yeah. And the fake commercials and stuff. That episode is beautiful.
Yeah, it gets to go really bizarre and subversive at times. He does little Twin Peaks-esque influences throughout the show.
There are some weird moments on that show. Overall, I was astonished by the show. When you talked about watching something and going, this is not the show that I really thought was really, like, with Insecure, I didn't know what to expect with Atlanta. The advertising had been so weird with the backmasked, like, backwards walking ads and stuff, and so trippy, and Donald Glover had said that this was Twin Peaks with rappers. But there are some weird little moments in this show that are both a thing I love about it and a thing that worries me about it in season two, because I don't know what they're doing with these, and if they're pure throwaway, I kind of wish they'd stop. The dude getting off the bus, bite this Nutella sandwich, and then he gets off the bus in the first season and just walks away. He's featured in one of the commercials in the BAN episode. But at one point, Darius is talking about somebody owning an invisible car. Another local Atlanta rapper owns an invisible car, and they just say it and leave it, and Darius says a lot of random shit, and so you just let it go. At the very, very end of that episode, I had to rewind it and pause it. They are outside of the club, and someone runs a car through the crowd and hits three or four people, and it makes the news later. And like you see bodies go flying and stuff. The fucking car's invisible, and it's a dude riding like a foot off the ground seated, and he plows through like 20 people and knocks them. The invisible car is real at the end of that episode. And I'm sitting there in the credits going, what the fuck is going on in this show?
I love it, man. It's so good. Let's go ahead and jump over to our number three show, which is Game of Thrones. Yeah, it's a pretty good show, I guess.
Yeah, I've heard of it and read all the books and love it.
Well, I mean, like Jonathan was saying in the comment we got earlier, there were a lot of complaints about season 5, and I think that season 6 came back very strong throughout. It seems to be closing the story gaps, bringing Daenerys finally across the sea to reunite with everyone, having Tyrion ascend to be a hand of the queen, having Arya finish her training, say fuck off, and jump back into the game. Like, all of it seems like all be culminating. The threat building at the north and shit falling apart down the south.
We get to see Ramsay's die.
Oh, yeah. And fuck Ramsay.
Yeah.
Man, been waiting for that one for a while. That's like an itch that you just like, can't get it.
Yeah.
Also got to love that her brother was like, no, this isn't my asshole to kill. Yeah. Like, that's love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I would have wanted to kill that guy myself.
I'll let you have this guy.
Yeah,
he sucks,
like,
but...
We convinced my mom to put a DirecTV dish out at the... we keep a camper by the lake in the summertime. We got there and camp. We convinced her to put a dish out there for Game of Thrones.
Just so you
it's
watch.
The only thing we watch, and it was like, we need cable out here.
So worth it. Man, and I guess we have one last season coming up.
Whoa, wait, they changed
it? Is it one or two?
Is it two?
Well, I think it's going to be two seasons, but they're short seasons, right? There's something like 13 episodes or something coming out. So it's going to be, I think it's released in two.
Oh, like a 7 and 6 or something.
Yeah. I think that's the last.
Normally I'm like, rip the Band-Aid off, but this one, nah, let's go slow.
Yeah, one thing I thought was kind of interesting, so the show has now passed beyond anything that was in the books, and so I'm like especially interested in Sansa's character, because on the one hand, she's, I think, wising up or whatever and playing everything a little closer to the breast and kind of like trying to figure out what she should do and scheming a little bit more. But I thought it was interesting that she put trust in Littlefinger but not Jon.
Well, given who she's been around the most, I mean, she, like, if you think about it, in the beginning, she never liked Jon, right?
Yeah, agreed. And, like, and it's strange, though, because Jon's a trustworthy dude.
Are you talking about in reference to the Battle of the Bastards?
Yeah.
Well, I think they kind
of... And also wasn't a sure thing. She didn't know
it wasn't a sure thing.
Was going to show
well, yeah,
up.
And I think she believed Jon would have opposed it, that Jon wouldn't have accepted his help.
Yeah.
After, because he knows that he had given her over to Ramsay.
Yeah.
And what an episode that was.
That was so
like
good.
How they orchestrate that. They know how to do full-scale battles. And
unbelievable.
My favorite episode of season 5 was that Hardhome one where they have that battle against all the White Walkers up in the north, and it's like half of the episode was that. Here in Battle of the Bastards, it's the entire episode. They went, "Oh, we can kick that up a notch," and they did it.
Oh, and you keep the entire time. You're just watching people battle, but it's so everything is happening on the screen just so fast. You can't take your eyes off.
Yeah. And if you thought that was amazing enough, then you get that finale. And especially that end shot was just
so good. Goosebumps. I like any, and also I just like that it's moving towards, like, you know, if it's like a Song of Fire and Ice, like there's a lot of little battles going on and bickering between households and like Cersei's a bitch. But like you can see culminating the real battle coming with like dragons and White Walkers. And that's going to be awesome.
Oh, and Cersei. Man.
Oh,
I forgot about that scene. That one knocked my socks off.
Oh my God, when the Queen of Thorns is like, what are you going to do? Kill everyone? And she was like, huh.
That's not a bad idea.
I mean,
wait, you're not going to do that, right? I'm not stealing your idea, am I?
Okay, well, let's move on to number 2, which is Stranger Things on Netflix.
I'm just going to do the theme song for each of our
shows. We record in Austin. We have a soft spot for that theme song.
Yes, and I believe it is up against itself for a Grammy. Stranger Things Soundtrack 1 and Soundtrack Volume 2, I believe, both got nominated against themselves.
Well, I wonder who's going to win.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
So congratulations to the guys from Survive.
This show kind of came out of left field for everyone. Yeah.
I remember them mentioning that there was going to be a Winona Ryder sci-fi vehicle, but they really did an exceptional job of keeping this under the wraps. Or under wraps. Like, just a beautiful job. The Duffer brothers, I don't even know who the hell those two dudes are. They can live in a sequestered hole for the rest of their lives. I don't want to find out anything about them. I really just love the show. I actually am not reading anything about season 2 coming out because I want to try to experience it as much like season 1 as I can and not ruin it myself.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
I'm totally going to ruin it, though, for you. Like, every episode of TV.
It's
going to
be nearly impossible. Everyone I know watched this show. Like, nerd friends of mine tried to shove this onto me as if I don't own televisions or something. Like, have you seen this?
Yeah, I totally watched that. But yeah, it just seemed like it was so engrossing. It was one of those shows where I, like, each episode I wanted to go and like talk to someone about it, but also since it was on Netflix, I could just hit play on the next episode. And so I did that instead.
It's like self-control, yeah.
Such a great job of figuring out that Netflix binge problem with pacing and amount of episodes. It's 8 episodes long.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them deepens it just a hair and advances some set of characters just a hair. It kept me just enough that it really did. It just flew from one end to the other.
Man, and how how fantastic of I guess a narrative technique to have the lights flicker when the monster shows up.
Yeah.
Like it built tension beautifully. Like when you're watching it and then the monster shows up, but just before all the lights are going batshit, everyone starts freaking out. It just built tension so well.
Have you seen the Christmas sweater? Where it's the wall with the Christmas lights and all the letters on it.
Well, and it allows them when Will first goes missing, like the crux that kicks the season off in the first episode, it allows them to have an incredibly scary moment that builds without revealing their monster in the opening shot. Mm-hmm. Because that is a terrifying... I rewatched that episode with a couple other people, and somebody looked over and went, "Man, I'm not going to forgive you if this is about to get bloody with that little kid in this barn. Like if the monster's about to eat him in the corner of this barn." It was like, no, it's fine. But they swell the light to just this bursting point of almost like Soderbergh whiteout, and then drop it, and it is a great effect. That show makes such good use of tropes in a new way.
It does. It's homage to all these different directors, all like Spielberg and John Carpenter.
Oh, big
just,
time,
just
yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. like how it does the music, how it does the light, how it does all these references without it coming across heavy-handed is just brilliant.
The font choices, the kid actors, all of it.
It's so easy to roll your eyes at that, and it's like, no, this one did it exactly how you should.
Since these guys showed J.J. Abrams how he should have made Super 8, I hope this becomes the next thing J.J. Abrams rips off.
The only problem I had with it was the actual physical design of the monster.
Mm-hmm.
It was... I really wanted him more in shadow. I don't know. When they actually showed the monster, the design was really cool and everything. I literally just did not want a freestanding creature that I could see all the angles of.
Don't show me. Tell me. Yeah. Threaten to show me.
I wanted to see that thing stay.
You want some more mystery to it.
Everything else, literally every other aspect about the Upside Down and the creature were scarier than the physical monster whose face opened up.
Yeah.
Even though that was a badass creature design, I felt like the rotting wall that they couldn't stop. Like you just popped a hole that was going to slowly take our reality apart.
Yeah.
And like we were going to become the Upside Down because you guys flipped a switch you don't understand. That and the how magnificently stupid and low information the Hawkins lab guys were when they're walking up to it of like, I don't know, there's some black ash snowflake shit happening and the hole in the wall. We're going to put a winch and a cable on the back of you. Good luck.
they here's a machine gun.
They don't know how to stop it or what they've done. I loved that.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed too the are we talking about endings and stuff?
Sure.
Okay. So I really love the ending. So it was so great that like she goes and she like rescues her son and like brings him back. But if that world is really what it has been professed to be so far, you can't just go there, live there for 2 weeks and come back fine.
No, you've touched
like,
it.
Like that's
now.
Not Ooh. How it happens. And so that
And what are you eating?
Yeah, what are you eating? Yeah, exactly. And so
a bunch of underworld food.
Time is relative in the Upside Down, perhaps. No, yeah. I mean, they haven't really explored
the physics. I love that feeling that, like, no, once you've stared into that abyss, it stared into you, and you're not severed that connection.
Yeah.
You're back.
Spitting slugs, my friend.
Well, and his like blink tension flicker between the two worlds, where like everything around him turned upside down and then back real quick, it was just super creepy.
Yeah, it's good.
Will's a demon.
And it got that Night of the Creeps slug thing going for me, which was one of my favorite sci-fi movies.
All right, it's time for our number one show.
Real Rob!
I'm sorry. It's Real Rob!
Randy's going to be so mad he's not here to talk about
this.
We love
it so much. Westworld, just another one that like, whoa! That's like, talk about HBO like leaving us feeling comfortable with Game of Thrones leaving. It's like, oh, we got something new for you guys. Don't worry, it's gonna kick ass. And Les and I have been talking a ton about this, so I'd like for Ashley and Kyle to kick this off
said all
at
my
least.
About Westworld, I think.
So yeah, go ahead.
Well, I cool. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to recommend it. I found myself after every episode first having like dozens of questions and then being wonderfully surprised when the next episode answered, you know, five of them. And then some of them were still unanswered. Little things like, well, can another guest stab another guest? Or well, I know they can't hurt me, but can they punch me? Can I fall off my horse and get hurt? And then slowly watching this world flesh out, they're like, hey, we're going to get there.
Yeah. Just slow your roll. I think somebody says that right at one point, they can't leave a mark.
Yeah,
like they can't leave lasting damage.
Well, and it's like, oh, what are they made of? Why can't they leave? Where does the train go? And all these questions I would have. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, throughout the series, in addition to this wonderful story, cool sci-fi, just like badass characters, just having this world kind of slowly develop, I really loved. And then the other thing is, you know, Skyrim is one of my favorite games. I really love RPG games. And they fucking nailed it. Like when you're walking by and the dude falls in the mud and he's like, oh, I want to thank you. You know, would you like a treasure map? And you're like, yeah, of course. Or how they all have those like little phrases they rely on. He's like, well, don't mind me. I'm just trying to seem chivalrous. Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, exactly. That's exactly how those games are.
Well, when creating a top 10 list of TV for 2016, I got really worried, this being such a recent show and so well received by not just me, but everybody I talked to about the show. I haven't found one person who dislikes it. So it was obviously first in my head, like, that's the best show of the year. But really, when I hammered down into it and tried to get as critical as possible, it's everything we've been saying good about the rest of these shows. It captivates the imagination. It introduces you to a world that makes you wonder what's going on outside of the story that you're presented with. Mm-hmm. But then they give you this really great story that keeps you guessing and does a few turns that even the people who, you know, had guessed kind of some of the bigger twists, they even gave those people something to chew on, something they hadn't thought about.
I have a friend who just really, really dislikes this show.
Like, oh, nice.
He did not like the first episode. I don't know
and
if you watched the
second one. And his address for our listeners?
Let's get him!
Yeah, gotcha. I'm not going to dox him on the show. and we just disagree. Like, it's just, he just doesn't like it. I think some of the things that really turned me on about it are probably some of the same things that he doesn't like, and I don't know why he doesn't like good cinematography or acting, but he clearly doesn't. But for me, this show was just spectacular. But I wrestled with the same thing. It didn't actually make my top spot on my personal top 10 list simply because it's a new show and they've only been running at this amazing peak efficient, like just amazing speed for one season. And there were other shows that I was watching this year that I feel like are operating at the same caliber of they are being their show as good as this is being its show, but they're in their third year. And so You're the Worst ended up being my number one spot simply because I can't believe a comedy is still running that well at 3 years and is still funny while tackling good things. And when Westworld hits season three, it won't shock me at all if it has left all other things I'm watching in the dust. But I did the same thing. I wrestled back and forth with, am I just too gushing about this show right now?
It is that whole recency effect. And, you know, I was talking about number seven, Better Call Saul, and I'm like, when that was on, I couldn't imagine anything else being that good. But it's also the way of us compiling a list that operates on consensus, and by above and beyond, Westworld was on all of our lists, so it had to be our number one.
Like Kyle said, it's captivating the imagination. I really do feel like they are... they know where they're going. They knew what they were showing me. This really was a puzzle and not just a lot of obtuse bullshit. So many of the characters said things that added up later. Like Ashley said, they would lay out questions and I would end episodes going, I have so many questions. And then over the next 15 or 20 minutes of thinking about the episode, I'd answer half of them myself because some other character really did say what I was looking for if I would just go back through it.
This is my problem with people who didn't pay attention during Lost. They answered your questions, you babies.
I did a rewatch after the episode where they make the reveal about Bernard.
Yes.
And I had you know, heard the theory about the split timeline, which, you know, was true at the end. But there was this one point that I remembered in the show where I was like, no, they totally break off. And sure enough, if in the episode where you find out the reveal about Bernard, you also are introduced to the workshop under the house. Sure enough, if that workshop wasn't a set in like the first three episodes.
It is where Dolores is in the opening. Yep. I'm in a dream with the fly on her.
Yeah. And then you watch the rest of those episodes. The man in black, he's talking to, I forget the outlaw guy who he does the train with later or early on. But he's talking to him and he's describing things in the train episode that comes later in the season.
Yeah.
Like they don't hide the clues at all. It's just you get the clues before you know what they mean.
Yeah. Yeah. You were shown these things when you didn't know they mattered.
Yeah.
Which, oh, that's just like any of the escape room puzzles or anything like that. Like I felt like this was just a TV show geared around that same just delicious puzzle box that I love.
Yeah, there one other thing I really like about the show is that when I first heard it coming out, I kind of thought it was going to be a miniseries. And then when it was going to be a show, I was like, oh, I want this to keep going. But at the same time, like, you know, is there going to be enough there? And I loved in the last episode, there's clearly other worlds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I also, a part of me really wanted Thady Newton's character to go on the train and go outside because I wanted to know
like, how does that look?
What happened to the world. Mm-hmm. So when Ford says, we evolved and then we consumed everything. Was he being metaphorical or is the world fucked outside?
I really wondered.
And a part of me was like, I know because Bernard already told us you're going to get off the train and go back and see this whole Westworld thing out.
I bet the rest of the world looks
really
like Terry
Gilliam's
Brazil.
I really wish I could see the rest
Brazil.
Of the world.
Yeah.
Well, two things. First is, so that at the end where she's told, oh, we know where your daughter's at. She's, you know, another part of the maze. Here's the location. Uh-huh. And then she's like, well, fuck that. That's not my daughter. And she goes to escape. I feel that she was programmed to escape, and where the sentience takes over, where she goes and, you know, solves the maze is when she decides not to escape and to go back.
Paul pointed that out, I think, last episode, that somebody online paused the spot on her on the tablet where it showed her programming, and her programming really does end with integrate into mainland society or whatever.
Oh,
and,
okay, nice.
And so I really do feel like her having already decided, nah, fuck that daughter, that shit's not real, you guys just programming with that, and then deciding, no, what makes us good or bad people is us deciding that things matter. Hmm. And so she decides that her daughter matters to her and gets off the train. I thought that was a really neat point for her to make her own real choice. I also really loved that when the guests leave, all the hosts that wait for them just go back to their starting point and shut down and they turn the lights off in the room. All those hosts that greet, oh, hey, welcome to Westworld. They're all just standing there dead-eyed. Waiting for the next train to show up.
Oh, and they do talk about, even the ones in deep freeze, they're not deactivated. They're in like a sleep, or
they're,
I forget
they're
the term.
They're just waiting. Yeah.
So they're just conscious down there with like locked-in syndrome.
Dreaming of electric sheep.
Yeah. So that last scene where you see like zombie style, it's just like, bitches, justice.
Real quick, not too much time, but if you could just any other world besides Westworld, what would it be? Mine would be Game of Thrones world.
Space World.
Oh, yeah, Space World would be good.
I think I'd kind of want to do a Roger Rabbit cartoon world.
I'd want Under the Sea / also Waves Above the Sea.
Ooh, nice.
Ocean Land.
Yours is called Cool World,
Yes, it is.
And it's awesome because Brad Pitt's there, too.
Unfortunately, it's also full of gonorrhea. Just full.
These robots are nasty.
That's not cool. So in this next segment, we wanted to discuss a few of our other favorite things that happened in 2016, drilling down a little bit more specifically into these television shows. And the first category I wanted to bring up was favorite television character. Did you guys have any character that just like really resonated for you guys this year?
I'm going to mention her because I didn't catch the show till quite recently, and it almost didn't get mentioned on my best of for the year, but the Queen Elizabeth II in The Crown on Netflix.
Oh, really?
Is anybody else watching that?
I watched all of it.
Seen a couple of episodes.
My gosh.
Yeah. John Lithgow just weirds me out in that show.
Oh, but you know what is nice? He's not doing an impersonation of Churchill. Like, he's creating a Churchill character. And there's a few times, I think it's like episode 2 or 3, where he's leaving and there's the blonde girl who's still working. And he's like, go home. And then he sneaks around a corner and she hasn't left yet. And he's like, no, go home. And he's almost like stalking her.
It's just the weird plastic shell comical hunchback costume they have him in that just weirds me out.
Yeah.
But no, that's his shell. He grew it.
It's just, it's odd.
The Elizabeth II character, though, I mean, I've never cared about the royal family until the show. And yeah, you really are like, damn, you were put through the ropes. Like, you had you had to do a lot.
For me, 11 from Stranger Things was quite a standout. Like, this is a character that is a kid actor, but it's a character that has to do a lot of their acting just with their reactions, their face, their emotions, because she's not very talkative. She doesn't really speak English in the beginning. And I was just pretty amazed that she could wear like amusement and fear and curiosity, just transition between all of them. And then also be a convincing little telekinetic badass in the show. Yeah, I really enjoyed that character.
Yeah, she was great. I think mine would have to be Edgar. On yours, you're the worst. Desmond Borgia, I think it's the actor's name. That character's always been funny on that show, but he's always been kind of the butt of jokes that wrote a mean line that just almost like, man, I don't think you could make that joke about a vet. and that actor always carried that with a grace that the whole cast of that show really, really walks a fine line very, very well. But this season, in season 3, they have dealt with his character from his point of view. They've grown him over the last couple of seasons into having a steady relationship and getting a job and kind of getting his life back on track without actually dealing with any of his actual issues. And the deepening of that character, while that actor keeps it funny, has really been an amazing trick to watch. And that this season he really kind of, his character broke out into his own full, not secondary character. Like, he's his own, he gets his own episode every once in a while now. And he's been great. I think Edgar's a great character, really portrayed well. I would say the lead on Fleabag, the unnamed lead on that.
I just started watching that.
Yeah.
So good.
She's amazing. She carries that show.
Yeah. Ashley?
For me, I think I would say Maria Bamford's character on Lady Dynamite.
Ooh, yeah.
That show rocked. I just loved it. Another show where I just didn't even know what to expect, kind of going into it. And it gets pretty surreal with its kind of odd humor. I am a huge Maria Bamford fan. Just, I like her comedy a lot. I think she won me over in Comedians of Comedy, you know, back with Patton Oswalt and Brian Posehn. And since then, I've just kind of been following her quite a bit. And I just love the character. And although, you know, dealing with mental illness that I'm not, there's so much about like the awkwardness about that character that I could just like so relatable. And she was so funny. And I loved the kind of odd, surreal turns that the show would take, where suddenly it would be like this weird, bizarre Asian commercial and then back to it kind of a deal.
She's driving in the car with a lamb all of a sudden.
and her adorable pugs. So,
oh gosh, the pugs.
They're so good. So I think that was the show that really kind of stood out for me as something really cool and really new, and a character that was really good.
You know, real quick, just to mention, The Good Place had a ton of great characters, but the Janet character, like the real life Siri,
Janet, yeah.
Yeah, that was such a creative thing to do with that show. It really is different.
If we move over to talking about favorite intros in TV shows, I mean, obviously Stranger Things kind of rocked a lot of people's socks. And it's so simple, and yet it's this play off of a Stephen King book kind of title, or Dean Koontz or something along those lines.
No, yeah, it looks like Needful Things or Skeleton Crew or one of the Stephen King 80s paperbacks.
Yeah, and it's just a play of typography mixed with that music from Survivor.
Survive.
That's the Eye of the Tiger.
it's just the right length, too. Like, there's so many intros that are just, but are just too freaking long, especially when everybody knows damn well I'm binging these shows. Like, I love the Luke Cage intro, but I fast forward through it because I watched a bunch of those in a row, and I don't, it's a little bit slow, and I don't want to sit through it every time. The True Blood intro, I swear to God, was half of the episode. That's like a 5-minute long song. They play every fucking verse every time.
That in True Detective, it was just god awful. Why is this so
especially
fucking long?
Season 2. Ooh.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of like In and Out, just hit me with the title card and move on intros. Mm-hmm. That said, Hannibal in recent years, I think, is the prettiest intro I've seen. Daredevil was almost the same intro, but they're both beautiful.
Yeah. The blood pouring in.
Mm. The Night Manager did this great thing where it's very similar to other shows where it's all animation based, but they were able to take these images of like bombs, and then the images transform into like champagne glasses, or there's this great one where it's an airplane that's dropping like these little dysentery, like the little flares, and then all the flares turn into a pearl necklace. And kind of this, you know, between being a weapons dealer and, you know, this James Bond lifestyle that the main characters were living. Just really interesting.
I remember the 11-22-63 intro was also, I mean, a little bit long, I agree. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those I'd end up skipping after I watched it that first time. But that first time with this little diorama and the pins and the lines and like the crazy person conspiracy, but little models of like charting the assassination, all that. It's so beautiful.
Did you guys see in the last episode where when he started changing things, all the clues disappeared?
Oh, damn.
So for the last episode, the intro is totally different. And yeah, all the JFK being killed stuff is
kinda
gone.
Like a custom one like Game of Thrones does.
Or like Fringe, you could always watch.
A little to your point, talking about binge watching episodes. So because it got added to Netflix a couple months ago, I was watching all the episodes of Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23.
I'm doing that too.
Okay, so I love the show. It's great.
If you want the actual airing order, I have that as a Google Doc I can show you.
Yeah, because they are out of order on
Way
Netflix.
Way out of order.
Which is kind of annoying.
I will send you the correct order. I was watching that this morning.
It's so good. It's so good. And the intro, it's like they know. It's a short show. They have a cold opening that's always hilarious. And then it's Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23. Let's go.
Yeah, about 10 seconds Tasteful. Of music and out. Yeah.
Tasteful.
So what about favorite episodes this year? Is there anything that stood out to you guys? Ashley?
I already mentioned it, but the Under the Sea episode of BoJack Horseman,
yes.
I really feel like deserves some kind of at least kudos from us. Like it was really something wonderful.
It's such a beautiful episode. No dialogue. One line of dialogue, maybe, in that whole
That's
episode.
That's a slow roll joke.
Oh, like, yeah.
It just punches at the end after such a lovely episode. And I also like that, as beautiful as it is, it has that same loneliness that his character has. So if you haven't seen the episode, basically he has to go to an awards show, I believe.
Yeah.
Or something like that, under the ocean. And he ends up finding this lost seahorse baby. And so he goes on a journey to try to return the seahorse baby to his father. And they end
up being a horse, it being a seahorse, there's this connection that he ends up bonding with it. And it's so sad.
It's so sad.
Because he doesn't want this parent thing life, but in a way he totally does as well. And he doesn't know how to kind of reconcile with that.
And like, there's all the physical jokes of like cartoons that you love. They end up in a candy store. There's like taffy on the ground. So it's already slow, and then they're slower. And just lots of visual jokes because, of course, he smokes, but he's underwater, so it doesn't work. And he's like, God damn it. And it's touching and sad, and then delivers with a hilarious joke at the end. So,
Les?
I think the second episode of Fleabag is maybe the hardest I've laughed out loud at television in a long, long while. It's one of the like ongoing train wreck of breakups with her boyfriend, who is as like emotional and fragile as she is, just hard edged and horrible, and it results in a couple of just hysterical breakup twists on the normal breakup tropes. Where she just clearly doesn't give a shit, but recognizes that she should, that this might be going too far and it might really be over this time. And she just can't help herself being herself in the argument. And I laugh so freaking hard. That, and there's a middle episode of Luke Cage. The spoilers for Luke Cage, but when...
only be spoiling me, I think.
Yeah.
I only watched the first three episodes.
He's the only dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm blanking on Miranda. When her character kills her brother Cottonmouth, and then of course they end up framing Luke for it, and it makes the plot for the second half of the season. But the scene where they've set up stuff with their childhood and they've set up what happened to her, they hint at a sexual abuse in her childhood, and the flashbacks they've done kind of show the protective nature of their brother, sister, but not really related. They've been basically both been adopted by a horrible gangster family. But the scene that culminates in his death was one of the best set up, best written, best shot. As soon as the ball starts rolling on their argument, you know where this is going. Like every line they say is like, oh fuck, you can't say that to that person. She's going to kill you for this. And it was one of the most sure-handed, like you pulled a trigger on some writing and it ran to the end of the scene. And it was in a show that was not that sure-handed in other spots. It was an amazingly on point, like, nope, y'all got that right. Damn.
Easy one for me is that pilot episode of The Night Of. I mean, it was a great series, but kind of like when I saw the episode of Sherlock Season 2, The Woman, for the first time, it's a standalone, like it could be a film in itself. And I remember getting to the end of that episode feeling like, why isn't this the season finale? Like, I thought this is what the whole season was going to be about.
Yeah. Like, how do you top that? And I feel like they were constantly chasing how to top that, and they couldn't do it.
Well, and they did some other stuff. They did some weird stuff in the last episode. But no, the tension, I was watching it at my desk on the computer. I was having to pause it. Like, no lie, I just was having to take a breath and just pause it for a minute because everything that happens to this kid, Maz, is that his name?
Naz.
Everything that happens to Naz in the pilot episode, it's not like something happens and then you immediately see the actions or the result of that action. No, you're forced to like, oh, when he's caught for when they find this, when this happens, and you're imagining the worst case scenario every step of the way. It's great TV.
I'll have to check the show out.
And I want to give a little shout out to The People versus OJ over on FX for, in particular, their episode Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
I get it.
I'm still on the glove episode. I don't know what happens next.
Topical.
Well, Sarah Paulson in this episode, she's playing Marsha Clark, and it is just this episode that really gets to the heart of when the media and everyone turned on her and made her this public figure and this laughingstock quite unnecessarily. And it was just this culmination of hatred and misogyny all targeted at her in the most tragic of circumstances while she's also going through all these personal issues, and how Sarah Paulson plays it, how the whole episode is shot. It's just brilliant. It's powerful. And it really makes you kind of look at her. Like, it made me definitely look at her and the whole thing through a different lens that I hadn't really considered. Cause I remember, like, you know, I was in fifth grade when the trial was going on, and yeah, I was just like one of those people laughing at her ridiculous hair, and she's just this goofy woman, whatever. And you go, oh, this is a real person. This is all terrible. What's going on here? Yes. It was a really powerful episode.
Suggested reading. She did a great, is it Sarah Paulson, the actor?
Yeah.
She did a great Fresh Air where she talked about the character and the situation. And it's like you said, I hadn't seen the episode yet, but you definitely look at it from a totally different point of view. It really makes you think about it differently.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and jump into our last segment, which is cleanup, I guess. Anything that didn't make the top 10 list that any of us want to go around the room and kind of give a quick shout out to.
Feels so old with that fifth grade OJ comment.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm being a couple years younger than you. Let's start with Ashley. What else would you like to mention here?
So one show that has been a center for me during a very hard year was Full Frontal with Samantha Bee.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot that happened this year. Politically, I think we share a lot of opinions. And even if you don't share mine, potentially our opinions, I think it was a hard political year on everybody. And, you know, I want to both stay informed, but also at some point I have to turn the news off. It's just too upsetting these days because it's so crazy. And her sense of humor did such a wonderful job of making jokes about it, making light about it, you know, finding the humor in it, but also never kind of belittling the somewhat terrible situation and kind of torn situation our country is in. Mm. So it was always a show I could watch where I would come away still a little upset, but feeling a little bit better, seeing the humor in it, and not feeling like I've made light of some really rough situations for everybody involved. Also, she's just super funny. Like, her sense of humor just really meshes with me. I like her style.
She's such a natural talent. Like,
yeah. You know what? The best thing about that show is whenever Comedy Central execs watch it and go, wow, we fucked up.
Yeah.
We fucked up.
Like, I watch her and I watch John Oliver, and I'm like, I remember when they were on Daily Show, and I thought both of them, like, they're pretty good. John Oliver, I didn't realize how good he was until he took over Jon Stewart's desk and actually did hosting for a bit before he jumped over to his own show. Like, then I was like, oh, wow, you could handle this. But with Samantha Bee, I'd like watch her little segments. I'm like, eh, they're all right. Her just owning her own show is so fantastic.
It's brilliant. And you can really see why, you know, even if she wasn't offered something like The Daily Show, it wouldn't have been for her, because she can go and make a show that I think fits her voice much better. Like, yeah. She's such a dynamic speaker with her body, like,
and it seems like she made some very smart moves that a lot of people, I think, in Hollywood wouldn't have made, where she didn't take the 4-night-a-week or 5-night-a-week show. She said, no, I'm going to write my own show. We're going to do it once a week. This is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. It's a once-a-week show, correct?
Yeah.
I feel like she purposely made some decisions that might have been counterintuitive to career. But then again, she's had children throughout her career, and she's continued to take breaks and do what she's needed to do. Like, it very much seems like she's an incredibly talented person running on her own terms.
Yeah, I think it also just allows her to be able to respond with much more biting commentary than something sounding a little bit repetitive.
Uh-huh.
Because she can have that break, she can target the exact news stories that she wants to, and she can take them down with such force. It's I mean, you know, it's talking probably to a group of like-minded audience members.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're a fan, you're probably a liberal.
Yeah,
for sure. You're not.
But
gonna...
I mean, can you imagine the state the country'd be in if we had not had people like John Oliver and Samantha Bee skewering this every week and leading us back to some kind of sane?
We didn't have real news to mix in with shit. If we didn't have real news to mix in with our fake news.
Well, and lately, I guess, just with the growing popularity of the show, I don't know what's up with their budget, but she's gone to Syria and like interviewed like refugees and just all kinds of really cool stuff that I feel like somebody is voicing my opinion out there in the world.
Yeah. Kyle, what do you want to mention?
So I tend to give variety TV more of a shot than some of my compadres, and it's because of shows like Top Gear and the Grand Tour. It's Top Gear, if you're not familiar, was essentially a consumer reports show for the automotive industry. They would drive cars and tell you about it, and they'd drive everything from like a cheap, you know, $10,000 Kia to some of the most expensive hypercars in the world. But what set this show apart from other kind of journalism based shows of the type is that these three characters are so entertaining, and every chance they get to go off script and do something just totally off the wall that has nothing to do with cars or talking about cars, and it's incredible. You know, one of the aspects of the show is they have, on the previous show Top Gear, they had a track where they would do time trials with these cars. The new show also has a track, but they have little things like they put a ominously dangerous looking power station at one of the curves. So it's like, oh, if you don't hit this curve right, you're going to hit this electrical box or, other like dangerous, turns and things like that. Way less about, you know, actually the handling of the car and more about just, you know, what jokes can we make while actually talking about this car? And yeah, they're only about think four episodes in right now, but I'm really enjoying it. It's a lot less on the consumer report stuff with the cars, a lot more on the segments, or as they call them, their films or their short pieces. If you watch any other variety TV show, whether it's late night or, you know, the morning shows, SNL, things like that, this is something you want to check out.
I had seen, I don't care about cars at all, and I'd actually seen a bunch of Top Gear mostly because of the segment Celebrity in a Reasonably Priced Car.
Yeah.
Basically, they take their celeb guest and they put them in like the shittiest Yugo type vehicle that they can find, and then they let them go on that track. And Tom Cruise can drive a freaking car.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Cruise is insane, but holy crap. Every once in a while, the celebrities, you get in there and you, I mean, just like take these turns on two, cruises up on two wheels on a couple of the turns.
Oh, yeah.
Like you can see them watching the show and you can see the host going, what happens if we kill Tom Cruise? and I'd heard the Grand Tour is a lot of fun.
Well, you know,
except that the U.S. Stig, their driver is a maskless guy. The Stig, he only wears his helmet. And I've heard the U.S. Stig does not drive as well.
No, it's different. But what's funny about the celebrity segment, so this new show is under risk of being sued for copyright infringement on the previous show. And one of the things that they can't do is they cannot do the celebrity in the reasonably priced car. So what they do is every episode, we have such and such celebrity on the show today. And here they are, and it shows them walking into the studio, and then something happens, and they're killed right before they can walk into the studio. So, I mean, like, Simon Pegg walked off a bridge, Jimmy Carr drove a jet ski into the side of, like, an ocean liner, Armie Hammer was bitten by a snake, Charlize Theron was eaten by a lion. Like, it's something different every, and then, like, oh, get on to the next thing, and they just move. But they do have, like, a little celebrity cameo each episode.
Les, what about you?
Okay, I'm going to go real quick through a couple of them. The Greg Berlanti Funtime Hour that airs four nights a week on the CW. They did a crossover this year that, while it did have problems and it could have been better, and I kind of wish they hadn't used the Dominators at all if they weren't going to show a full invasion and call it Invasion, but fuck it. It still put stuff on my television that I honestly am sitting here right now, and I may have to go rewatch it. I'm not sure that happened. Like, how are all those characters on my TV? Five-year-old me is still just not believing it. The Get Down was on Netflix this year. I feel like it is another one that tried something different with the binge format. It's calling these things, I think, books and then chapters. So this was like book one, and there were six chapters to it. I thought it was a neat new way to break these stories and drop it all at once.
Yeah.
It's also Baz Luhrmann, who I love Baz Luhrmann, but a little bit of Baz Luhrmann goes a real long way.
That's what I thought.
And that first episode, I almost didn't watch episode two, and I'm glad I did, because Baz Luhrmann designed the show and set the whole thing up, and I believe he writes and directs the first episode, and then he hands it off to other people
to tone it down.
And they take all the great things about Baz Luhrmann and they strip away the, like, Jesus Christ, man, I get it. And from there forward, the show is outstanding. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt moved into a second season. It's like getting my 30 Rock rewatch, only I haven't seen all these episodes. And I really can't believe that they actually took some of the character tweaks that happened in the first season, let those plot points remain and move forward, and kept the show going. But my number one show for the year that I think only would have made Randy's is You're the Worst. That show should not be in a third season of a comedy dealing with issues as heavy as clinical depression, which they dealt with better than anything I've seen on television in season two. Season three, they're dealing with PTSD in Edgar, one of their characters. They did a two-part episode where they showed the whole episode, which was hysterically funny. The next episode was the same episode from Edgar's position, and it's tragic and still hysterically funny. That's a trick. Like, I feel like that writer's room is some kind of masterclass. I hope they're filming those guys' work.
I think I have to do my yearly reminder to myself, I need to watch this show.
I think I've said that too.
I can see why it's not funny for some people. Like, I know some people that watched a couple episodes and just went, no, that's not my kind of humor. And because it definitely crosses lines, and in the same way that Casual has made me laugh but has a melancholy I can't deal with, I feel like You're the Worst probably has a meanness that some people don't find funny. But
yeah, well, for me, we already mentioned a little bit of Mr. Robot, and there was some conflict on how people felt about that. I would say that I did enjoy the kind of slow pace of this season. I thought it did some bonkers off the wall stuff. Having Alf legitimately appear in an episode was pretty
hilarious. That's the last episode I've seen so far.
Sorry, Jonathan.
And then I also want to say Silicon Valley just continues to be a fantastic comedy over on HBO. I mean, HBO, look at their whole lineup of shows. They got Insecure, they got Game of Thrones, they have Westworld, they have Silicon Valley.
Jude Law and Young Pope.
Oh, man. Yeah.
The commercials for that look really great.
Yeah, Young Sexy Pope, man.
It's either going to be awesome or awful.
It just looks like a train wreck.
There's no in-between with that one.
Anyway, very excited about all of that. And is that it, guys?
I think
that might be it.
Does this mean 2016
everybody should watch Fleabag,
will end?
I can talk about a couple more shows real quick.
No, let it go.
Well, and I'm looking forward to next year when I can finally watch the seasons of things I'm waiting to hit streaming that I'm already paying for, like Better Call Saul season 2. Yeah, there's so many things. Halt and Catch Fire. There's a whole season I've not seen.
You're the worst. Mm-hmm. No, really, Les, you're the worst.
Do you guys have any good 2016 binging experiences? Like a week long, you didn't see the sun come up?
Just like more than one thing?
My girlfriend hadn't seen a single episode of Game of Thrones, so I got to do that fun one. That was my binge for this year. But then seeing somebody who doesn't know what's going to happen, oh, it was fantastic.
I have not seen a single episode of Game of Thrones, and my wife is now three seasons in, and I've still not watched a lick of it.
Really?
I don't remember how long this year is, but I feel like I did do a rewatch of Friday Night Lights at the beginning of the year. And it's a good show, except for that season two.
I rewatched an outstanding amount of Gilmore Girls getting ready for for helping do a podcast on the first episode.
But yeah, none of that Game of Thrones, right?
No, none of that. Well, I don't know, man. Game of Stars Hollow is pretty fucking vicious.
Well, it's been a terrible year in the world.
Except for TV.
Except for in TV.
In my personal life, I'm sorry.
And in Les's personal life, it's been great.
It's been fucking great.
But we would like to say, let us know what you guys think in the comments. Let us know what were your favorite shows. What are you mad that we left off of here? Not mad.
Nope. Divorce. Guys. Divorce. Real quick.
Unless it's divorce.
Before Randy hobbled out on a cane, he was like, you guys better mention Better Things.
Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Here's Randy's list real quick. Better Things, Billions, Night Manager, and The Americans. He wanted to mention all of those.
All really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go, Randy. Rest up, buddy. Get better.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We're going to go ahead and call it here because this has been an extra long episode. And we want to say thank you, listeners. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Les. And until next week,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.